LLAM.com. This interview was originally conducted a few years ago, just as Monsanto was being acquired by the Bayer Corporation, which has agreed to pay $10 billion to resolve an estimated 120,000 lawsuits alleging its pesticide Roundup caused non-Hodgkin lymphoma. That's going to do it for this edition of Green Street News. Thanks for listening.
Stay tuned for Ecologic, coming up here on WBAI New York.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth and telling where we're gonna plant our seed, it makes me wanna cry. For the children, makes me wanna cry. For Mother Earth, makes me wanna cry. We could know if we listen to the earth.
Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
And we have Sally Giller, and I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for November 18th, 2022.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
The 27th UN Conference of the Parties on Climate Change is ending, and we wanted to know if there were any important agreements. Ben is currently at COP in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, and Doris has been to four previous COPs and has been hosting daily internet conversations here at home. Hello, Ben. Are you there?
I'm here. Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
Yay. So what's going on?
Ben, introduce yourself and a little bit about your organization.
Sure thing. Thank you so much. I'm Ben Gallas. I work at the Center for Biological Diversity and based in the United States. I'm based in D.C. We work on wildlife and environmental issues across the board, but I'm on the climate team. And this is actually my seventh Conference of the Parties I'm currently calling in from Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, and I've been here for about 2 weeks, and we're nearing the end of a very long and grueling 27th conference of the UN Climate Change Summit, and yeah, it's been especially challenging both because of where we are and because of continued opposition to real climate action from some of the biggest polluters worldwide. So anyway, we're nearing the end here. It's still going to be a couple of days, essentially, of hard work to try to push to the end and get the best decision we can and hold our country and other big polluting countries accountable before we head home.
And Doris?
Hi, Doris Marlin. And I am Unitarian Universalist, a faith denomination that holds and tries to live our social justice values. And I've been hosting daily conversations trying to help people understand all of the machinations of COP. My academic background is water resources management. My professional background is project and risk management.
Great.
Now, we've heard secondhand reports of arrests of protesters, including journalists, but we've also seen protest photos, so things are probably not as bad as we feared. Ben, what's your impression? We have Ben from Egypt, so the connection may not be wonderful.
I'm here. Sorry about that. No, it's been a bit of a challenge here. Yeah, this year, you know, in past years at the UN summits, there are a range of different ways to demonstrate, both on the inside of the summit and out in the street. And just because of where this is taking place and the situation here in terms of how protest is treated, we've basically been confined to the protests on the inside of the UN Climate Summit this year. So there's very kind of ritualized, stylized ways that civil society is allowed to take action, you know, in demonstrations and little rallies and having banners and art. We've been using a giant inflatable pipeline to demonstrate the urgent need to keep fossil fuels in the ground and the failure to address that in the text. So we've been making it work, but definitely trying to make sure we're keeping ourselves safe, keeping our community partners safe, keeping those folks around the world safe in a context where just, you know, traditional protests in the streets isn't possible.
From the virtual perspective, I've seen that there is a screen now posted before events that says, "This is a harassment-free zone." So they're getting it up on the screens virtually as well.
Well, I guess there is...
How has it been, Doris? In terms of getting information from COP, Doris, have you found it easy to get material to spread to the UUs?
Well, there is so much out there. And really, it's a total fire hose with organizations sharing their COP27 guides, hundreds of videos of side events posted and available through the COP27 website, as well as so many organizations that are not on site, on location, that are also hosting events and trying to describe what's going on. And the variety is just incredible. Indigenous society representatives, technical engineering, people like Ben representing the technological and solutions that are based on nature-based solutions. So, yeah, tons of information, just hard to be able to organize it and share it in bite-sized chunks.
Hey, Ben, this is your seventh COP. Why don't you tell us why do you keep going and what progress are you seeing? Ben?
That's a great question. Yeah, thank you. Well, it's my seventh COP. I am 29 years old. When the COP started, I was 2 years old. So that means pretty much my entire life. The origin of the UN kind of framework on climate change was put in place just the year before I was born. So they've really been working on this for 30 years. And it's really inexcusable that we're at a place where we're so far behind the dial of what science and justice demand in terms of addressing the climate emergency, which, you know, was a climate crisis even when I was a baby, and now it's a full-blown climate emergency. We have floods and hurricanes and vastly inequitable and unequal responsibility and impact of this crisis. But so the thing I will say is there should not need to be this COP27. We should have been at a place long before now where there was serious coordinated global action to keep fossil fuels in the ground. But this is where we ended up, and it's the only global forum that we have. And we know this is a global problem that requires global solutions. So I keep coming back because it's the only hope we have of a truly coordinated global forum to address the crisis. That's one reason. The second reason is it's a target-rich environment for really getting to the folks that have the levers of power to take action. You know, the framework itself here in the UNFCCC, the UN Convention on Climate Change, it goes only so far. It has only so much enforcement power. But domestic policy back in the United States, especially the world's largest historic polluter and continuing to be the largest oil and gas producer in the world, it goes a long way. And we have access to decision makers, you know, all the way up to the president here in terms of being able to advocate directly and influence the media coverage around them that we just don't have typically back home. So it's a media megaphone to get grassroots voices lifted up to the highest levels of policymaking for us here in the United States and for other countries, wherever they may be from. And then finally, it's also a critical moment to build with movements that we need to build. Social movements are really the solution. People power and continued pressure on elected officials, but also exchanging information, strategies, building relationships. A lot of what you heard from Doris in terms of the opportunities to really connect with one another and build for the long term, that's irreplaceable.
And Doris, you've been to 4 COPs. How easy is it to follow what's going on there right now?
Oh, well, it's actually pretty difficult because the most pertinent issues are still being negotiated, and they really won't come out, or very little will come out until everybody shows their cards and puts the final ink on the document. So, you know, some stuff is coming out, but really it's kind of a information comes out at kind of an exponential curve. There's a very little for a long time, and then at the very last minute it just shoots up. But I wanted to build on what Ben said because I can so appreciate it. My son was 3 when I first learned about climate change in 1991. And so I've been paying attention to climate change ever since and was so grateful when things kicked in the mid-90s, only to, you know, find 30 years later things are just not happening. But I'm going to paraphrase John Kerry, who said this when COP was in, I believe it was Lima. He said, COPs and the Paris Climate Agreement won't solve climate change, but climate change will not get solved without them. So we absolutely need this global forum to pull together because, you know, as far as a global forum, it's the only game in town. Can it be better? Oh, yes, definitely. Does it need to be better? Yes. And that's why the people go and why we hold our decision makers and representatives accountable.
Now, I know there are a lot of fossil fuel folks there, and some of the activists have been concerned that there are so many of them. But do they have a role?
Well, I'll just give a short answer and say, yes, they do have a role. They are our fossil fuel experts. Now, does their role go into justifying extrapolation in environments where the frontline communities can't defend themselves because of what's being done? No, there are many, right, many roles that they should not move into, but, you know, not everybody has that level of expertise about fossil fuels, fuels in general and helping us get from one source of energy to another. And please, please go ahead and offer your thoughts on that, that same question, Ben.
Yeah, thanks, Doris. No, I appreciate that. I mean, honestly, I may respectfully disagree a little bit here. I think we're seeing actually a spike in fossil fuel representation at this COP in particular. There are more fossil fuel lobbyists or representatives here than the top 10 countries that are most impacted by climate change combined, which is just an egregious imbalance, right? So yeah. These folks are directly profiting from the continued, the continued extraction of oil, gas, and coal, but by proxy, the continued devastation of the global climate. And they just should not have a disproportionately large voice in a summit where literally small island nations, those that are most impacted, are struggling to even send one negotiator to be present. So this is the time to
totally
kick the leaders
out.
We're joining with many others in calling that, you know, this is just not a time where we can really afford to have fossil fuel lobbyists in the room. And I trust that there are ways to get the expertise needed. But this is truly like this is a political issue at this point. Fossil fuel industry is blocking progress. We know what we need to do. We need serious action to keep fossil fuels in the ground to start phasing out and oversee if SWIFT managed to decline fossil fuels. And there are several countries that are calling for that this year, and we're really pushing to make sure that that is seriously considered for the text, explicitly calling out fossil fuels, which it hasn't been for the past 27 years. Anyway, I can talk more about that, but thanks for the question.
Yeah, we hear about
I totally agree on the disproportionate aspect, for sure. Totally with you.
I was at a webinar a few weeks ago before the COP27 started, and there were people from North America, South America, Asia, Africa, and Europe on that call, and they were very worried that we're going to hear the term nature-based solutions over and over until people believed that it was a real solution and that what it really was privatization and all kinds of destruction. Could you address that? Because I'm sure our listeners will hear about it over and over. Ben?
Sure thing. Yeah, I can say a few words. This is not my core area of expertise, but nature-based solutions is among a number of terms that you're going to hear when you're at a venue like this that are actually being driven by corporations and by big business. So another one is climate-smart agriculture, and you'll hear these in different venues. And again, it's sort of follow the source of who's driving the conversation, who's framing the narrative. They're looking for a way to keep peddling their lies around the need for continued big fossil fuel influence and big agriculture. And in particular, there is a big concern here around, more broadly, setting up carbon markets or carbon credits and having avenues to be able to trade continued pollution, to kind of buy the ability to continue to pollute and offset that with activities that are really being driven by the global north and specifically, big polluters or big corporations in defining what it looks like to be able to actually use indigenous land essentially across the globe as an offset mechanism. So nature-based solutions, it's not my area of expertise, but I would just say you really need to look at the fine print. Who's defining what those solutions are, to whose benefit, who's sort of in the driver's seat in looking at what's getting defined as a nature-based solution, and then what is it being claimed as compensation for, right? So if it's something that is put in place in trade for continued extraction or big agriculture, any of the other core drivers of the climate emergency, then it's not a solution.
Yeah, Doris, I know you've worked with UU's and Citizens Climate Lobby, and they like a price on carbon. Is that different from the carbon credit kind of thing?
Yes, and I am not as up to date as I could be on what the Citizens Climate Lobby is advocating, but it is a fee and dividend solution where there is a price on carbon. We all pay it. Anybody who uses carbon pays it, and then those funds are redistributed back in a more equitable manner to those who need it most, those at the lower end of the income scale, so that it becomes more equitable. I'm not saying it's fully equitable, but definitely it is a way to make sure that those who use excessive amounts of carbon in their lifestyle help offset the cost to those who don't.
What about loss and damage? That's kind of like the Superfund. Water pays?
Unfortunately, loss and damage has kind of become the place of last resort. We have focused on trying to fund mitigation, as in reducing the amount of carbon that goes into the atmosphere. That has been seriously underfunded for decades and under-addressed for decades. So adaptation, in order to survive in the environment that where carbon has not been mitigated, moved into the picture, and that is seriously underfunded and under-addressed. And so that has made the need to assist is not the best word, but that has made it increasingly a problem because so many are now subject to loss and damage of their homes.
As usual, folks, time flies by and we need to wrap it up. My God, this time just goes by so fast. But we thank our listeners for joining us. For more information, go to www.umfe.org and www.biologicaldiversity.org. We link to more details on our site, www.ecoradio.org, and join us next week on Friday, November 25th at 2:30 p.m. when Reverend Billy of the Church of Stop Shopping joins us for Buy Nothing Day.
And that's UUMFE.org. To use.
Our site has information on many topics, including the December 4th premiere at the Dances with Films Festival of Radioactive, The Women of 3 Mile Island, a new film by director and producer Professor Heidi Huttner with a radical new take on the 3 Mile Island nuclear meltdown. Super Sam Sandy victims still need help after all these years. Tomorrow, I'm going to Huracan, a comic book convention, to raise money to help. HurrCon will take place Saturday, tomorrow, November 19th, 2022, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the Parish Hall of Bethany Congregational Church at 100 Main Street, East Rockaway, New York. That's on Long Island, East Rockaway on Long Island. There is a donation for admission at the door. Children under 12 in costume get in free. We love to stay in touch with you. So those of you online, please go to www.ecoradio.org and sign up for our email list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. Enter eco-logic.
That's www.ecoradio.org.
Since Paris in 2015, the annual Conference of the Parties has gotten a lot of mainstream coverage. Like Greta Thunberg, we're wary of greenwashing. We don't do that. We talk to the critical activists. WBAI is not compromised by accepting ads or donations from corporations or foundations, which is part of the reason that you hear us asking for your support so often. We need you for Ecologic and WBAI to exist.
So to support Ecologic and have it be a win-win, you can choose from our many interests and premiums. Most can be found both on their own webpage, ecologic.wbai.org, and on give2wbai.org. Our topics range from renewable energy to indigenous rights to celebration of nature programs. go to ecologic.wbai.org, leave out the www, and donate in the name of your favorite program, Ecologic. To become a member or contribute daily, monthly as a BII buddy, call 212-209-2950. We love to see those Ecologic buddy pledges.
Our thanks to excellent engineer Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you.
And major congratulations to our Sally Gellert on her 2-year anniversary as co-host of Ecologic.
I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us next Friday, November 25th at 2:30 p.m. for Buy Nothing Day.
Greetings. I'm Francesca D'Alessio with the WBAI Community Bulletin Board. On Friday, November 18th, 8 to 10 p.m. at May Day Space. May Day Space is located in Bushwick, 176 St. Nicholas Avenue. That's Friday evening, November 18th. Feminist Collages New York City is painting the names of the people murdered in this year's act of anti-trans violence. They are inviting the public to join in. They say they create slogans from gender-based oppressions that should make front-page news, but don't. For more information, go to their website, maydayspace.org, or send an email, info@maydayspace.org, or give them a call, 732-771-9564. On Saturday, November 19th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., the People's Forum presents a talk on the real path in Ukraine. The gathering is demanding a radical shift in the direction of U.S. military and foreign policy. Peace, not war. The People's Forum is located at 320 West 37th Street in Manhattan. That's in person at the People's Forum, 320 West 37th Street, and streaming online. This Saturday, November 19th, from 11 to 4 p.m. Sound Off, Music of Baal presents a live concert at the People's Forum, featuring string quartet music in support of Red Canary Song, a New York City-based massage workers collective formed in 2017. The People's Forum is located at 320 West 37th Street between 8th and 9th Avenues. For more information about these events and more, please go to their website, peoplesforum.org, that's peoplesforum.org, or give them a call, 347-695-1095. Also, on Saturday, November 19th at 7 p.m., there's a free screening of Gabby Gifford's Won't Back Down. This is co-sponsored by Gays Against Guns, which you can hear on WBAI Tuesday at 2:30. This screening is at the Park Slope United Methodist Church, 410 6th Avenue. And Gays Against Guns is also putting together a Trans Day of Remembrance on Sunday, November 20th, from 4 till 8 p.m. at the Stonewall Memorial, 53 Christopher Street in Manhattan. For more information, go to gaysagainstguns.net or call Sarah Lilly at 347-254-9057. On Monday, November 21st at 6 p.m., there's a statewide action to protect human rights and dismantle New York's incarceration system. Simultaneous rallies in multiple locations across New York, including Albany, Buffalo, Long Island, and New York City. The rallies are urging New York to restore packages, visits, and mail to incarcerated people. To implement the HALT law ending prolonged solitary confinement, and to adopt long overdue legislation. For more information, go to rapcampaign.com. That's rapcampaign.com. If you have an event you'd like to share with us, please email cbb@wbai.org. For the WBAI Community Bulletin Board, I'm Francesca D'Alessio.
And the previous program was Ecologic, which is heard on Friday starting at 2:30 p.m. here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. Now stay tuned for Live on the Fly with Randy Credico coming